This presentation deals with the basis for knowledge in medicine and in public health. In the old days, about 200 years ago, both people, doctors and governments relied on superstitions and beliefs inherited from previous generations. In the 19th century, bacteriology and epidemiology started a revolution in thought. One of the heroes was John Snow, who lived from 1813 to 1858, and he realized that the contagion of cholera was waterborne, and he stopped the epidemic by removing the handle of a water pump in London. During the following 100 years, science and medicine developed, but clinical medicine was still to a large extent based on practical experience. Doctors had one question: does it work in practice? This question brought an end to bloodletting, which tripled the mortality in pneumonia, and it started the introduction of BCG vaccination against tuberculosis. But it is often difficult to answer such questions of whether it works in practice. Take the position of babies in their cribs as an example. The mothers were told that babies should sleep face down, but it turned out that this position increased the risk of crib death. Epidemiology has been the chief source of public health knowledge. Large population studies have been important and very influential, especially for cardiovascular diseases. But we have now entered the era of evidence-based medicine, and we rely on it. This has led to progress of immense importance. Is it possible to make a definite score for our basis of knowledge? I believe the answer is yes, but don't forget the limitations. And now follow the limitations as I see them. First, many of the large studies, especially the controlled trials of drugs, include only selected persons. For example, the elderly above 75 are often excluded. Second, local culture and local problems may differ. A typical example is the French paradox, which is that the French become older than many other populations, but we are uncertain about the reasons. For example, how much wine is good for you? Third, national culture is always important. For example, the Swedes live longer than the Danes, and the Danish say, okay, but we live a much happier life. What is the goal then in public health? A long life or a happy life? Fourth, some investigators have personal and or commercial interests that may influence their results, for example by selecting special populations, but nevertheless drawing general conclusions. I believe this is a problem in several studies by the drug industry. Fifth, political interests may also influence the use of science, for example by favoring studies that fit with prevailing ideologies. And the last, self-interests are always important in modern science. Competition is tough and the law is simple enough: publish or perish. What does it all boil down to? I believe we can and should rely on science, especially epidemiology, as a basis for public health. but we should always have a place for healthy doubt. Some 400 years ago, Oliver Cromwell in England said, "By the bowels of Christ, think it possible you may be mistaken." Finally, there is one important consideration. Whatever we do, and no matter how right we are, there are always side effects to consider. For example, there is a fine line between good public health and a negative health system. The goal of public health is to reduce health risks, but a risk-free life is an illusion. And an elderly lady walking outside in the winter said to me, "The greatest risk of all is never to take a risk."